operate a big station, an HF station, inside that glass room as a guest operator. And everybody can watch you through the glass walls operating an HF station in the Technology Museum in Frankfurt. So I asked them, what is this? And they told me. And I said, I wish I knew about that. I would do it. But the funny thing is that everybody watches you through this glass room, through these glass walls, as if you're some kind of a oddity back to you.
Well, I can understand that. They kind of, you're part of the display, and they, you know, watch an amateur radio operator operate a radio. I mean, the ARRL, I think, offers vaguely similar things. They have a couple of studios, and if you ask them, they'll let you use the radio and use the call sign. But I don't think they put it in glass and display it to other people, though. But that's an interesting little thing.
Yeah, I was in the basement, the first floor, and I saw it was telephone cable, underground cable. The way they displayed everything was beautiful. And I was explaining to my girlfriend at the time how telephone cable was laid underground and through conduits, how they put a slight pressure on it, keep the water out. And then the guy was looking at me, and he says, you know, I retired from the phone company. I was a lineman in New Jersey. He was like, oh, you're like a subject matter expert on this. So German guy, the telephone expert, was having a good conversation with me. And as we went up to different levels, they had different equipment. It was very interesting. And then computers and so forth. And when you got, I said, where's the amateur radio equipment? He says, where it should be. I said, well, where should it be? He said, it's up by the roof. I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, well, that's where the antenna is, you know? I said, antenna? He goes, man, wait, do you see the setup we got up there? You should have called ahead. You could have been operating if you have a license. I said, I do. I have a call sign also. He's like, what? You have a German call sign? So he was quite surprised. But unfortunately, I didn't call ahead, so there was no chaperone or whatever they want to call it there to open the door for me. Well, man, they have a world-class setup. The Germans don't play around when it comes to ham radio. They have what they call a student or a conditional learner's license. That is a lot less money than the regular license. The normal license costs 100 euros. It used to cost 100 euros a year. If you don't pay the tax, you lose your license. But as an American, I was exempt from taxes because of the Status of Forces Agreement. So I didn't pay the tax, but a German would have to. And they're very strict. And they'll come and, make sure you're not on the air with that direction finding truck. You're very, very strict about everything over there. And a ham radio license is very coveted, you know. You're a very important guy when you have a ham radio license. Thank you.
AC2GS. Yeah, the Germans don't screw around. Unfortunately, I think the budget of the FCC when it comes to amateur radio is related is probably about $1.50. It's really sad what's become of us in relation to the FCC. I think we're the red-haired stepchild of the FCC these days.
And you know, when I worked for the railroad, we had a transmitter throwing out a signal on a lot of frequencies, and we had a direction finding equipment that showed us it was about 100 miles away, believe it or not. And we tracked it down. We sent the information in to the FCC on our sheets of, we had a certain paperwork we had to fill out. When we did it, we sent it in. And the FCC was very responsive to what we wrote in Denver. And they came out with us and the local sheriff. And we found it was the type of a telemetry device north of us. Tracked it right down with our direction finding equipment right to the shack where it was. It was a municipality's piece of equipment that went off frequency and was transmitting illegally, and the sheriff cut the lock, believe it or not, and the FCC threw the switch. And they responded to a commercial issue quickly, within a week, you know? But I said, that was funny, being the only ham radio guy in the shop. I said, man, I could have complained about that. You would have blew me off. He says, well, that's the difference between ham radio and commercial. You know, I see that. And then when I worked for the government as a biomedical engineer, I didn't really make no stink about some of the radio stuff I'd seen on the Indian reservation. But I did make one phone call about the really outrageous stuff that was going on the air with the ambulance service that they shouldn't have been doing. And I found out when the government reports the government, when it's internal, when it's the United States government doing something, they don't use the FCC, they use the NTIA. I think it's called the National Telecommunications. I'd never heard of this agency before. But some guy came down to the hospital from the NTIA as a spectrum coordinator to stop the nonsense that they were doing. I said, so you're not the FCC. He said, no, the FCC will never come down and fine anybody because it's the government. They don't fine themselves. The only people that go after the government when they're doing something wrong is the NTIA. The FCC is for everybody outside the government. And all they gave these people were a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, it's a shame. There used to be a guy who used to jam all different repeaters. He was just a pain in the backside. And the FCC was doing absolutely nothing. And then, fortunately for us, he decided he was going to screw around with the police department's communications. He got his hand on a handy-talkie from the police department, and a couple of months later, they threw him in jail. So, yeah, there are some people you can screw around with like us, and there are others that you can't.
Yeah, I remember that guy. I remember that. That was crazy. I read all about it. Yeah, I remember when they got that guy up in South Dakota, and I was in Nebraska, and we tracked it down with our beautiful tracking device we got from the military. And same one they used in the military. And it was throwing a carrier every once in a while on our yard channel. And it would actually tell us how far away it was and exactly where it was. It was beautiful. The military uses this thing. And that way you could drop a mortar round right where somebody's transmitting from. This thing was unbelievable. Anyway, they came out real quick. I guess they have not much to do down in Denver, you know, as far as, you know, responding quickly. But this thing with the government, it was the ambulance and the police department on the reservation were operating without a license for years until I looked up their license and realized it had expired. You know, and I reported it, and I said, you can't operate without a license. They said, you have to pay for that, you know. They didn't pay for it. They've been operating without it. And they had no dispatcher. They were operating with a mobile radio without keeping a log. It's the whole nine yards, you know. They were using a cell phone when they couldn't hear them on the radio. I said, you can't do any of that. You have to log everything. They weren't listening. I said, well, I'm not a radio guy anymore, but you'll find out. So I called them, and I reported them, and spectrum manager for the NTIA. I never heard of this before, but he's from the Midwest. His whole Midwest is his region. That's a sweet job, you know. He was about two grades higher than me, and I said, I'd love to have that job. You know, you have your own car, you have your own office somewhere in Kansas City probably, and nobody knows who you are, what you do, and you're raking in 120 a year doing nothing probably most of the time. The NTIA, that's the internal FCC of the United States government that investigates government radio interference with the government. Nothing to do with the FCC. How bizarre is that?
AC2GS, so that's interesting. I got to look that up. I am sure that there are loads and loads and loads of government agencies that I have not heard of, that most of us have not heard of. Most likely a lot of those are going to be shut down in the next 6 months, but who knows. But, yeah, I'm sure there's loads of them out there that we have no clue about.
He's probably been dosed already, you know, for all we know. Well, it's the same way, like they say, they were all freaking out about Radio Liberty and Voice of America and all this. It's still working. you could drive around Europe, like I did, and you hear Radio Liberty. What is this station I'm listening to? People, American DJs have been sent over to Europe to broadcast. I'm driving around Prague, Czechoslovakia, listening to an American radio station. It's the weirdest thing. They're broadcasting out of the embassy or the consulate over a radio station on an Iranian, you know, and it's an American DJ. It was one of them from New York that had went off the air, and she found a job. It was a woman, and they recruited her and put her on Radio Liberty in Prague, Czechoslovakia. It was the oddest thing I've ever heard. And they were playing American format radio. Very strange. The radio with stations. The last thing you need is one more station operating out of the embassy, you know, or the consulate. But they had it. You know, these obscure jobs. What a sweet job that is. You get paid for overseas pay. You get paid for your apartment. You get paid for your cost of living. You get paid for your, offset for everything else. Pulling down $200,000, $300,000 a year to live in Prague. Talk on the radio. Meanwhile, back in the States, you're washed up. Nobody wants to hear you anymore. You know, so, there's these gray area jobs that a lot of people are finding. People don't know about.
Oh, that's interesting. Ultimately, they're just going to hook everyone's audio through voice over internet protocol, and it'll be the final jump is local to RF. But in the end, I tend to think that everything's going to be homogenized.
Yeah, rightfully so. I use WhatsApp to speak with all my friends over in Europe, because they don't use the Facebook stuff and all of that. They use WhatsApp. They've always used WhatsApp. And not because of the encryption. They just use it because it works flawlessly, seamlessly. They drive in their car, I drive in my car, and we're driving down the road on video with each other. And they're in Czech Republic or in Germany or in France. And we're having videos the entire, an hour, hour and a half, while we're driving down the highway with each other, flawlessly, with WhatsApp, you know? Works beautifully. And it's like a voice call the whole way. It works free of charge, free app. Works excellent. It's like Echo Link with video. Excellent. So, I'm running out of... I'm going to be coming up on my area now, so I'm going to say 73. Good night for now. It's 10:14 by you. I'll be optimistic towards the change of the band, and hopefully I'll get you. And I'm on 6 meters every day all the time. I'm on 10 meters every day all the time. And let's see what happens. I'll be there right when it opens up. And I'll hand it back to you. This is N2BH.
And this is AC2GS. Thank you, Ken. Trails, 73, and we'll talk to you down the line, both 10 meters and here. I thank you for keeping me company here. Have a safe trip.
Okay, bye-bye. I'm going to sign off. Leave the repeater. N2BHD out, clear.
Okay, very good, Ken, and very good for the technical neck. I hope everyone had a good time. I was looking at the audio stream on the internet, and we had 8 individuals listening in on the internet stream alone. So I'm glad we entertained you guys. We're going to move over and have Paul WS2N with the SpaceNet report in a second. But once again, thanks to everyone who participated tonight, and I'll be back after the SpaceNet report to tie a little bow tie on everything. Paul, take it away with the SpaceNet report.
Thanks, Roy. AC2GS WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And, I don't really know how much material we have for tonight, so we'll plow along here. I wanted to talk about this one spacecraft that's on the way to an asteroid called Psyche. The name of the spacecraft also has the same name, Psyche. Launched about a year and a half ago from Florida. They used the SpaceX Falcon Heavy. That's like 3,000 bolted together to get this heavy spacecraft off the ground and pushing its way all the way to the asteroid belt. Well, this thing has a solar panel probably as big as a tennis court. It's got a communications. They got a big dish antenna attached to it for X band. They used the S band when it was closer to Earth. And this is, the course it's on is on, it's roughly halfway to its destination, Psyche. And it's around almost 200 million miles now from Earth. To give you an idea, the Earth from the Sun is roughly 93 million miles, so it's equivalent to twice that distance. And what they wanted to do is, they test the things as they go along, different instruments on board, and they wanted to give the camera a good test for the distance. So just the other day, they turned the camera around and pointed it back to where it came from Earth, and took a picture of the Earth and the Moon. And, if you see the picture, it's only a very teeny tiny dot is the Earth, and a smaller dot is the Moon. And I thought it was a very, very good picture. Not since Voyager did the pale blue dot, when it was past all the planets, and Voyager wanted to turn around it to of Earth. That was great. That was historic. Made it into many books. But this one I thought was great too, and sent it over to Roy, and he put it onto his website. So if you bring up AC2GS, if you bring up roy.ac2gs.com, you'll get his whole web page of all the different great topics that he has. But if you scroll down a little bit, you'll find the SpaceNet report and this picture as well. So, any comments? Yeah. I heard somebody. Try again. Negative copy. So, okay. There's another interesting cargo vehicle that's really complete, being built in Japan, and it's called the HTV-X, and the HTV. Original HTV was built by Japan to send cargo to the International Space Station. And they used to launch about once a year. And they had used a hydrogen, liquid oxygen rocket, well, the H2B to do that. And everyone was successful. Every rocket that went up made it to orbit and was able to push the cargo vehicle to the space station, where it was eventually captured by the robotic arm and then bolted up to one of the ports. And at the time, it was bringing up really the most amount of cargo. I think it was around 12, 13,000 pounds of stuff. And, you know, that's an advantage for the astronauts that live on board. And over the years, they flew this thing 9 different times. So, you know, they had like a 9-year run. Every year, they would launch another one of these HTVs on the H-2 rocket. But now that ended around, 5 years ago, in 2020. The reason for that is they were in the process of building a brand new HTVX design, which is capable of carrying more cargo. It's also capable of putting last-minute items on board. That happens a lot. Sometimes something breaks on a space station, and they say, well, the next one going up is, you know, in this case, the HTVX, and they would be easily able to, you know, open up one compartment and add stuff to it. It sounds easy. Oh, you just open up the one door. But what they have to do is actually have to open up 2 doors. You know, there's a fairing. They have to have that capability to get past the fairing and then into through another hatch to do something like another plus by the HTVX. This design also has the capability of not only going to the International Space Station, but, well, you know, other future space stations, you know, commercial ones that are built. And more importantly, it also has the capability of flying to the moon. You know, hopefully if the cuts aren't too severe and they keep funding all these different things that they wanted to do, including the Gateway space station that is supposed to be eventually in orbit around the moon. Well, that would have to be resupplied, and there's a couple of contractors that are involved with it. Well, actually, it's 3 that I know of that are involved with something for this, but this one is really complete. So it would be ready if they needed it to be launched, in this case, from Japan. Northrop Grumman also has a vehicle they're working on for resupply, and so does SpaceX. But this one has a tremendous amount of payload capacity. So hopefully this gets off the ground in the next couple of months. They said the fall, and it will also be launched on a brand new rocket that Japan has built. The rocket is called the H-3. See, they had the H-2 and the H-2. It was the H-2A and the H-2B. H-2A was, you know, hydrogen, liquid oxygen rocket that Japan would launch all their science satellites, and, you know,
I gotta go to the bed.
Your everyday satellites would go up on that, and then they had the H2B, and the H2B was used for launching only cargo for NASA to the space station, and now they built the H3. H3 has capability of doing all of the above, so it's more versatile. So that thing has launched, I believe, 3 or 4 flights so far, and this would be another one. So we'll see. It's good to have, you know, all these different people involved instead of just relying on one company. Any comments for the SpaceNet report, the U.S. to us?
WB2BX,
WB2BXO. Good evening, Frank.
Yeah, good evening. I may not have caught the very beginning. Maybe you mentioned it, but I did see a couple of things came up saying Starship might launch tonight. What have you last seen?
Yeah, that was my plan. I was going to have an exciting early evening. I was going to be listening to this net, and I was going to be listening to the launch and the continuous flight of Starship number 10. And yes, that was supposed to go up at 7:30. And then there was a slight delay and then a complete scrub due to a ground fault problem, according to SpaceX. So this doesn't have to do with the rocket itself. And whatever it was, they need to get out there and fix it. Can't do that when they have a partially fueled rocket going on. So that's been delayed. Right now, it looks like indefinitely, because if you go to the site, it says to be decided. But my guess is probably within a couple of days, they'll probably reschedule Starship number 10. Anybody that doesn't know about the Starships, they're up in flight. The first nine have, some of them have been partially successful. There's two main parts of the rocket. There's the booster, and there's the Starship itself that sits on top of the big heavy booster. And sometimes the booster has failed, sometimes the Starship has failed, sometimes both. So they're looking to stop doing that and succeed all the way around. They haven't made it to orbit yet. They haven't tried to get to orbit. They keep launching and trying to test different aspects of this whole design. But lately they haven't been getting anywhere fast. So we'll have to see what happens in the future. Frank, back over to you.
Yeah, very good. I think the light scene came up and then disappeared, that they had to scrub for the evening. It doesn't sound like they're going to go in 24 hours. Anyway, it should be interesting to see what happens next. Just like with the Falcon 9, I would think this will eventually work, and when it does, it kind of totally changes spaceflight. So I think, to watch what Jeff Bezos is doing, as he actually got his Super Heavy into orbit. It is, as they used to say in high school, it's the guys who don't talk, right? B2BXO.
Yeah, he got his heavy lift New Glenn vehicle up. About a half a year ago now. Might have been January. That was successful, and that's a real heavy lift vehicle as well. Puts out like almost 4 million pounds of thrust. All right, Starship. Yeah, that's maybe. Easily twice that amount. Eventually, times that amount. They plan on, boosting up even a higher thrust in the future. But they need to have everything all together. And they have a theory of, I know we talked about this before, of just build one right after the other, launch it, and if something goes wrong, fix that, launch again. And over again, And Jeff Bezos does not think like that. He wants to test every little part. And this way, when they eventually put every little part together, he knows that those parts will work. And it, you know, it paid off. You know, that was a successful fight. Now he's got another one planned, and that will be coming up next month. The end of the month, September 29th, will be the next New Glenn fight by Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin company. And that will be the one that will be sending two satellites to orbit Mars. Now, it will take a long time to get there. Usually, when they launch something from Earth to go to Mars, it's usually a six-month journey. It turns out to be an 11-month journey. And the reason for it, the original flight was supposed to take off, you know, for these two Mars satellites last October. But Jeff Bezos' rocket wasn't ready, so there was a delay. And at some point they thought, well, we'll have to wait to the next window for Mars. Mars window opens up a little over every 2 years, around 27 months. They thought they might have to wait for that. But because it's such a powerful rocket and the payloads are so light, they decided that, you know, they could just put it onto the, you know, basically the same orbit, and it will eventually get there, except later. So it will take 11 months, but, you know, that's fine. Those two satellites were also built by another rocket company, Rocket Lab, built the actual satellites. So, yeah, it will be good to see how it works. That particular flight, I'm looking forward to seeing if the booster is able to land on the drone ship. The last time they tried it, well, it was the first and only time that they tried it. The booster fell short. They had some, I think, hydraulics or something eventually, you know, ran out on it. I forgot the details, but that it didn't make it back to the ship. Would have been hitting a hole in one, you know. They did make it to orbit on the first flight, but they did not catch the booster on the drone ship. The drone ship, by the way, is named Jacqueline, which is the name is Jeff Bezos' mother's name, and he just lost her recently. She's passed away. So hopefully, this booster will make it back, and then they'll be able to bring it back to Florida, refurbish it, and launch again. We'll see. They have these very powerful engines that are all built by Blue Origin. They're called BE-4 engines. Each one is putting out around 550,000 pounds of thrust. On the first stage, there's seven of those engines. And you know, in a little over 2 minutes, they shut down. And the booster will separate from the second stage and hopefully return and land on the drone ship Jacqueline, while the second stage heads to orbit, first to orbit, and then eventually will go. It will go on a trans pause and jump to Mars. Second stage has two engines. They're the liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engines. They're called BE-3s. The U at the end, BE-3U. BE-3s are normally used for New Shepard suborbital vehicle, which has flown many times, I think 32 times. In fact, they were supposed to fly again, I think, about a week ago. That would have been around the 33rd launch of that, of the New Shepard series. Well, that was delayed, and they had some, I think that was a ground problem, a technical problem as well, so. That one didn't involve a crew. That had all science experiments on board. But these BE-3 engines, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, has flown over 30 times on the New Shepard design, flying people to suborbital space successfully, one right after the other. So the BE-3 engine is very, very reliable, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. So Jeff Bezos, what he does, he takes two of them and puts them onto the second stage of the New Glenn rocket. So that's what that part is. It should be... That worked very good on first launch, and the second launch. I'm sure he's hoping for the same results. And just getting back to the Starship for a second, they have the Raptor engines, 33 engines. On the first stage, and then they have six Raptor engines on the second stage. So thrust is, each engine is a little bit less than what Jeff Bezos has on his engines. There's a big difference between the amount of engines, 33 on the first stage compared to Jeff Bezos' seven. Which is a good idea. Those same engines that Jeff Bezos is using for his New Glenn rocket that he normally would have seven on, he sells also those engines, the exact same engines, the B-4 engines to United Launch Alliance, and he puts them on the Vulcan rocket, which has launched successfully so far. Three different times, and there's two on that one. And by the way, ULA is looking to eventually, recycle those engines as well. They plan on, eventually having it, just the engines separate from the first stage for now. They'll probably come down with some type of a heat shield, and then eventually. Probably a parachute toward the very end. But the heat shield they plan on using is an inflatable one. As it's coming down, the thing would inflate with nitrogen and coated with some kind of a aft coat, which would, protect it, from too much heat as it's coming back through the atmosphere. Not that they get as hot as, coming back from, let's say, orbit. When they come back from orbit, they come back at 17,500 miles an hour. The first stage only comes back, they only get up to, around 2,500 miles per hour. So they don't get as hot when they return. But they do get hot, so they need to have some kind of protection. So, okay, where am I here? Any comments? This is WS1.
Yeah, WB2BXO, if I'm not monopolizing it.
Glad to have you. It's quiet here in Queens. Queens, that's where I used to live. It's quiet here in Suffolk County. Back to you.
Yeah, very good. I am a former Brooklyn person, as you probably know, that I finally have an offer on my old apartment in Brooklyn, so hopefully that'll finally be sold in the next couple of weeks. Anyway, it sounds like what you're saying is, there's two things going on is what it sounds like. First of all, Jeff Bezos has a different design philosophy, even though both he and Musk come from the software design world, they still seem to have different philosophies. Musk being a more iterative process, Bezos being more about getting it right. It is interesting. But the other philosophical difference, I think, is that what Bezos is doing is more evolutionary, and what Musk is trying to do is revolutionary. In terms of the philosophy of science, Musk's system works. It's going to create a new paradigm, as I say, in access to space, as opposed to an evolutionary change in a heavier vehicle that can get satellites to Mars without necessarily waiting for the traditional so-called Mars window, which is interesting. It sounds a bit like waiting in Penn Station to go back to New Jersey and seeing expresses and locals on the board and deciding, okay, should I take the local or is the express going to pass it? it sounds like a similar sort of thought process. Go ahead.
Okay. I remember those days. Oh, man. Where, you go into the city and you find out the subway is on strike now. The transit was down. Now what do you do? I used to get off at Penn, walk over to the west side and take the pass trains because they weren't on strike. I used to take that to Hoboken. And then, temporarily, they had it set up where you just stayed on the train, and then it would pull out again, and it would drive you to downtown, where the Trade Center was. That's where I had a job. I used to get off at Penn and normally take, the two trains. Well, that was out, so the roundabout way, you go to New Jersey and back from New Jersey back to New York. It was crazy, but whichever was faster. But a lot of fun. So Jeff Bezos' rocket. I really like the whole design. I've seen a couple of YouTubes on that. It looks good, and he should be able to, pick up the pace once he's able to recover the booster to have many more launches, because he plans on doing a lot of launches to get his satellites into space. He plans on launching 3,200 satellites within a couple of years, so he's contracted out over 30 missions on the Vulcan rocket. He's got countless missions on his New Glenn rocket. He's contracted out with Ariane 6 to put his satellites into space as well. And he even is paying SpaceX to put some of his satellites up there as well. And he's already used Atlas twice to put some of his satellites into orbit. Now he's 102 satellites The goal is to have 3,200 some odd satellites. So a lot of launches coming up. And, we'll see. I used to watch all the Falcon launches, one right after the other. Now there's so many, and I can't do that. But, the Starship is new, so I was going to watch that tonight. And, of course, Jeff Bezos' September 29th launch of the new Glenn rocket. That's very exciting. That will be a game changer as well. So, all right, not much more to add here. But, I know there's a couple of things I do want to talk about. I talked about last week, the X-37B went up on a Falcon 9 rocket last week. That's the top secret Defense Department space plane. Of course, it's unmanned, but it looks like a small shuttle. It even has the tiles on it. And it for a couple of years, they'll launch it on a rocket. They've already launched on the Atlas V years ago, and they enclose it, completely enclosed in the fairing. It goes up the fairing, splits open. The X-37B winds up in orbit, and then they've extended the time that this thing spends in orbit. Years ago it was 6 to 8 months, and it went to a year, and now it's 2 years. This is the eighth flight of one of these things. There's two of these X-37Bs that exist. So they launch this one and put it into orbit, and they don't know how long it's going to stay there. So maybe it'll stay another 2 years. When it comes back and flies through the atmosphere, it has engines on board to slow down, hits the rarefied air, gets even slower, and they land it on the runway. Comes through the atmosphere, and they always want to land. A couple of times they landed in California on Edwards Air Force Base, and most of the times they land right in Florida, which they'd rather do. It makes it easier to refurbish it. So, any other comments? Nothing much more to add here, but we still have a few minutes left. This is WS2N.
Yeah, I just add that what Jeff Bezos did, I think this is almost unheard of, successfully putting an orbital class rocket in orbit on the very first attempt. So I think that was still historic, even if he didn't succeed in recovering the booster for the first time, since his company just doesn't have the kind of experience doing that SpaceX has. WB2BXO. Have a good night.
Okay, thanks, Frank. And Vulcan was successful as well. First flight, they made it to orbit. Looks like that's going to be a very reliable rocket. That one replaces Atlas V. It replaces the Delta IV and the Delta IV Heavy. So it's very versatile. You could launch it, without any boosters on it at all. You could launch it with, two, three, four. The last one that went up was with four, for the that was a government mission, sending a satellite to geosynchronous orbit. The whole mission before that, they launched with two, and they could launch up to six boosters. They'll probably do that and a couple of flights from now, because that will be the first flight that they are able to put satellites up for Jeff Bezos, Amazon. I believe that they'll be able to launch 45 satellites compared to the 27 that could only be launched on the Atlas V rocket. It gives you an idea of the difference between the amount of payload that a Vulcan could put up compared to an Atlas that is replacing. So that's good. We'll pay attention to that. So yeah, they had a first flight success. Jeff Bezos with New Glenn did as well. So we'll see. I'm going to sign for now. We'll thank everybody that listened, and Frank, and we'll get back to you guys next week. We'll try to make the Limark Club Info Net tomorrow night at 8:30, and that will be followed by Swap and Shop, and that's always followed by Radio News. Roy, over to you. AC2GS, WS2N. Back to you.
Okay, very good. This is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for everything that you do for the technical net and everything you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I hope you learned a few things, and I hope you were entertained, and I hope you join us next Sunday when we start to, when we try and do it all over again, starting at 8 p.m. So, as always, I like to remind people of a couple of clever comments some people have made. Our own Dick K2RIW always would end his technical nets with advice to be kind to each other. And good old Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brain falls out. Everyone have a great week. Stay safe. Be well. Enjoy the Labor Day weekend coming up next week. And I'm AC2GS, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.
Yes, 73, Roy. And you weren't on Elstar that time, correct?
Say again?
The last transmission, you were not on Elstar? Were you back on your radio?
Yeah, I'm back on my radio. My little mixer in my computer is acting weird and not connecting my headphones correctly. So I figured even if I'm not heard distinctly for the closing comments, nothing much will be lost.
It's a very good copy. You know, I mean, a little crackery noise in there, but, you know, very good. Not like the old days. See the propagation, or, you know, did you get a bigger radio? 73, Roy, AC2GS, WS2N.
Yeah, it's the same antenna, the same radio. It's probably propagation conditions. I mean, the only major benefit of using All-Star, if it isn't for propagation, is that I can operate full duplex. So if people kind of talk over me, I can hear it.
Have a good night, Roy.
You too, Paul. This is AC2GS, and I'll be clear.
So, it's great, guys. I'm in my nephew's wedding party next Sunday evening, so I probably will not be here. WB2BX, so have a good night.
Good night, Frank. You'll be missed.
Have a good one. Have a good time. 73, right? WS2N2.
And why shouldn't our brains fall out? It seems like everyone else's brains have fallen out in this country. Have a good night. 73, WB2BXO.
That time complete. L repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. L repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is